was busy praying. I wasn't listening to Dennis. Anyway. Okay, two more sessions tonight and then next week. We'll try to get a copy of the exam up. Did you get it?
I saw it, but I didn't do anything with it yet.
Yeah, I hope it. I mean, it's got WYSIWYGs and stuff on it.
Okay, I didn't look at it.
You know, my smiley faces and my frowny faces for true and false and, and that kind of thing. So it should be on the net. We'll see if I get a shot at it. I'll maybe try to do an answer key, but I don't know whether I'll have an opportunity to do that. It's just, you can figure it out from the notes. It's all there. Just read the whole Bible and you'll find an answer there somewhere. So, anyway, so that will be available. I think it's a four-page exam and fill-ins on part of it and true and false, lots of that. And so that way you can double check this. It just fits in with the notes. If you have the notes, it's just a supplement. My exams, I try to write them so they reinforce where we've been. And so that's my goal. That's not just evening school. I try to do that anyway. So that it's a teaching tool that ties the knot, we hope, on some of these classes. So this is always a fun class on unfallen spirit beings. Then when we do the class on Satan and demons, do I want to call it a fun class? Anyway, it's a very interesting class. So we have these two subjects under the heading of angelology in normal systematic theology. So and I haven't even looked at where we're going next year on these things. I need to say one consequential thing. Yesterday, my work day was a very productive work day, and I got a gorilla off my back. I finished my theology syllabus, ended up with 270-some pages for that one class, so I started to add up how much writing I've done since October. And with synopses, the syllabus, a big syllabus, my forum material, I'm over 600 pages plus everything else. So I know why I'm tired in that matter, but I'm thankful that that's done. And then we found out that on Thursday last week that I had 20 pages to do on a syllabus that I thought I had all. I mean, I had a copy, but it was probably prior to this present computer. And so I had to do that yesterday. So I'm very thankful to be alive and well at this point. Okay, we're on page 19, and we're dealing with angels as messengers to individuals in the New Testament. And when we talk about the definition of angel, angelos, is we're dealing with the word messenger. It happens to be in the New Testament angelos. And in the Old Testament, it's Malach. And they both have the idea of being messengers, those who deliver, I won't say news, sometimes they deliver orders, they deliver interpretations, they deliver revelation. There are a large number of things that spirit beings do as angels, and they're involved in other things. But their primary duty is to share within the universe. Angels do messages between angels and between humans and ultimately God. Kind of interesting when you have an angel delivering a message to a cherub. And we have that record in Jude where Michael the archangel delivers a message to Satan. And he says, you can't have the body of Moses. And he says, I'm not using my clout. I don't want to blaspheme, but rather I'm going to say that God says you can't do it. And that kind of settled it. Now, it's interesting as we look at some of these, and I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time in this first in Roman numeral 14, but we're dealing And that's where we left off, according to my haphazard mark. And an angel delivered a message to Philip to go to Gaza. Now, in contemporary terms, we understand a great deal about Gaza because the Gaza Strip is one of the biggest pains in the neck of the Israelis. It's not that far south of Tel Aviv, and that's where they throw those missiles at Tel Aviv. And it's really interesting. There's a lot of trouble there. There's terrorism that has come out of Gaza. The Israelis have fought it far better than we tend to fight terrorism. And by that, I mean they do a lot of profiling that would be totally illegal here. And if somebody comes across the Gaza Strip, you better have proper ID or you're going to have a new place to live for a while in that. And they tend to arrest them very quickly because of the issues of terrorism. And they would have that kind of an issue. It's, meanwhile, back at the ranch. So Gaza, we know. In 826, it says, and the angel... An angel of the Lord spake unto Philip, saying, Arise, go toward the south into the way that goeth down from Jerusalem into Gaza, which is desert. And so it's interesting to go from, if you drew a line down from Jerusalem to the old city of Gaza, it would take you down through an edge of the Judean desert. And it's not exactly the greatest habitable land. Southern Israel, their province is called the Negev, which is the Hebrew word for south. And this skirts the northern part of it, and the south is desert, basically. So he goes down there. I've never figured out quite where this was. I don't know anybody that really knows, because we don't know about a place where there's water. There was enough water there to make it noticeable. And so he goes down, and there he meets this man of Ethiopia who's an eunuch, and he's in the government, and in a high place of government as a slave, and he's sitting on his chariot reading Isaiah. Nice way to pass the time of day on that, and that means he had wealth, the wealth at least of Ethiopia probably at his disposal, because he is able to buy a scroll, and there were probably more of them in his chariot. And that was a very, very valuable commodity. Written documents in the New Testament era were more valuable than gold, because it cost so much money to buy the materials and to hire the persons who would write them, and that Isaiah scroll would have been a substantial scroll. I happen to know one that's there's no way anybody could buy it. Somebody sold it cheap on it, and that's the Isaiah scroll from Qumran. And now it's so expensive. I mean, they couldn't set a price on it anymore. It is so valuable. They used to display it in public. They don't anymore. And that Isaiah scroll is probably, what do I remember, 30 or 40 feet long. And it's all put together in sheets of vellum, that is, in animal hides, and is written on those. And when we were in Jerusalem at the Shrine of the Book, is what they call it, neat place. I wish I could have spent more time there. But they have a circle where there is a replica of the Isaiah scroll, and that used to be the real McCoy. They have it in nitrogen in some kind of a special vault, probably not even on the premises. And somebody said, is that the real original scroll? And I knew it had been, and so I said, let me look and I'll tell you if it is or not. I hadn't read or anything about it. So I walked up and I looked it over and I said, nope, it's a replica. And how would I know? Because they use thread to stitch the pieces together. And you can't take a picture and make it look like real thread. It's a picture. And as you can see, it's a flat surface. And so I said, look at where the sheets would be sewn together, and you'll see that that is smooth. It's not, there's no thread. And then I read a little later in the same adventure that it was a replica. Fun place, though. See, when we take our tour of... right next door to the... where the scroll... Well, that's right by the Israeli Jerusalem Museum. But they have a model of Jerusalem in the time of Herod, which would have been about the time of Christ. And that model is twice as big as this room. All of these buildings, and it even has the spring down below the Temple Mount, and they even have a little sprig there that looks like a tree growing there. But it's pretty interesting to put your mind into that. No more tours. Let's go on. An angel. Cornelius saw an angel who delivered a message. And in Acts 10, you have these descriptions of Cornelius. Cornelius was a Roman. He was a Roman centurion. He may have been a Jewish proselyte because he is identified as a devout man. The word devout is the word eusebia, which is a word for one who gave, that's translated godly. And it for us, and as Greek believers, eusebia means you give God full credit in your life. And let that work. But in 10:3, and I'm not going to look at all these verses, he saw in a vision, evidently at the ninth hour of the day, an angel of God, an angel from God coming into him and saying unto him, Cornelius. And he looked on him, and he was afraid and said, what is it, Lord? He calls him Kurios in this case. And he said unto him, thy prayers and thy alms are come for a memorial before God. And it's interesting, when I said he's called Eusebius, it's in verse 2, it says, devout man, who fearing God and all of his household. He was an interesting, but a messenger, an angel came to him, and it was in a vision. And every time you see something happening, if you see vision, he's awake. If you see dream, he's not awake. And so that's the difference. It means he sees something with his eyes. Often, with a vision, nobody else sees it. You know, it's interesting with Paul, when he had saw Christ in the Damascus Road, it was a vision, and he saw him. It was enough to put his eyes out, as it were, blind him. And he was the only one that saw and heard, and Christ spoke to him in words that were comprehensible, and those who were there thought that there was just a rumble. That was all. They didn't hear words articulated, and that's a good thing to remember. I'm not going to go through the rest of these, but you do have this involvement with the angel, with Cornelius, and he was also involved in this vision that gets Peter moved to go to Cornelius. And so there's a message delivered. Now, the word was spoken, Acts 27:23. We're not going to go over there because you may remember that story. They're in the shipwreck, and the ship is falling all apart almost. They're headed for really bad water. They were concerned about these prisoners that were being taken to Rome. There was a concern that maybe they would escape, and they were ready to kill them. They didn't want to risk their lives to let his prisoners escape. Well, Paul had this visitation from an angel and said, everybody's going to live, so don't mess with us. Everybody's going to go ashore, and they're not going to run away. And so an angel gave that message. And so Paul repeated it, and they believed Paul. And that's exactly what happened. in that case. The word was spoken by angels in Hebrews 2:2, and because that is not so familiar, I want to go over there. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 2. And I need to read the verse before it just for fun. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. And he said, pay attention. Now, the word slip, since we were referring to an ocean or Mediterranean event, the word slip here has the idea of a boat who slips its anchor, and so it drifts. That's the idea of that root. And so lest we should drift. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, was the anchor. It's kind of interesting when we get on down to chapter 6. It talks about Christ as the anchor of the soul. But that's the idea of steadfast. And every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward. How shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord? But you see the idea of the word spoken by the angels. It's not the word. Well, wait a minute, it is too. There's a preposition and a participle between the definite article and the word logos. And logos says that which has some content. I mean, he emphasizes the content whenever logos is used. And it was solid. It was very solid. In Revelation 1:1, we have an angel that delivers a revelation to John, which is recorded in this book. And as this last book of God's Word is identified, he says, a revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants the things which must shortly come to pass, and he sent, and he signified it, and I don't like to say signed it, but he substantially signed it, by his angel unto his servant John. And so here's a message delivered, and what a message it is when we get into the book of Revelation. Now, angels did some very interesting things that are revealed in the New Testament that are somewhat abnormal in the Gospels. You've got some interesting truths that always stir us up because is this exactly what happens now? We do not know. We have a possibility because we see in the Old Testament they're doing one thing, whereas in the New Testament, it is not clearly revealed. I think of some music that has been written out of some mishandling of some of these things, and especially these songs that relate to death. And you'll notice in Luke 16, angels carried Lazarus. It says, and it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by angels into Abraham's bosom. And so they provided transport into Abraham's bosom. So they made certain that Lazarus, the beggar, went to the right place. And the rich man died also, and he was buried. Now that creates some interesting things, because in that case, they don't say the angels carried him where he went. It just says he was buried. But notice the next verse. The next verse says, and in Hades he lifted up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abram afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. So it's interesting. He is In the grave, it's kind of interesting when you talk to some people that have issues about what we call annihilation. Annihilationists happen to, it's really kind of funny because you have a lot of people knocking on doors. At one time, they hoped to be one of the 144,000. Then their group grew bigger than that. And then they still hope to be one of the 144,000. But those that died, they've changed their theology, and they don't believe that those who are witnesses against Jehovah are going to be annihilated. Now, what is annihilation? Annihilation is that belief that after death, there is no longer any existence. And so that's the end of it all. And that's what Jehovah's Witnesses essentially believe. They deny there is a literal hell. They deny a lot of things like that. And so here, this passage is really interesting. And they have a problem. They say that Sheol and Kever, which is a word for grave, and Sheol is the habitation of the dead. Remember in the Old Testament, the dead saints went to Abraham's bosom. And then those who were unbelievers, they went to a compartment in Sheol. And there was, and you can see in this section, there's a great, vast space between where the unrighteous would go and the righteous went then. Now, there's not, the chasm between the two is huge. And we can say that is because Abraham's bosom, or paradise, was delivered to the edge of the third heaven. So that makes a pretty good sized gap in between. And so it's at the edge of the third heaven. We know that in 2 Corinthians in that matter. Let's see. An angel periodically troubled the waters of the pool of Bethesda to heal the first sick one who entered the waters. You know, it's interesting. We don't have answers to your questions. An angel did that. How long did he do it? Was this of God? They certainly believed it was. And this was not charismatic healing meeting where they get in the water and they get so cold they'd walk on water and walk again until they warmed up and then they'd be crippled again. I was at a healing meeting at one point and it was going on and on and on. It took them an awful long time to take an offering. And, they preached almost a 30-minute message just for the offering. And then they had a healing line. And they had these people going into this healing line and getting healed, you know, one after another. And this one guy, they had him running around on the stage. That couldn't, why, he had thrown his crutches away and this sort of thing. And so I had to go to seminary the next day, so what I did, I finally just slipped my way out and went home. But out in the foyer of this auditorium, the guy that had been healed was there. And yes, he was really well healed. That guy was in such tremendous pain. He needed his crutches bad, but he'd thrown them away. And he could hardly move. I felt sad for him. But he was trying to get some relief out there, and I'm not sure they wanted him to hang around, but he was there, and that was an interesting thing. And in this case, I believe that there were some who were healed. This guy was in such bad shape he couldn't get in the water. And so, what happens? Christ comes along and he overrides the angel. He doesn't even let him get in the water. He just heals him. Just heals him, that's all. And I'm not going to go, but it does say he troubled the waters. There was some kind of movement in the waters. And that was the mark. In John 12, people heard a voice that was attributed to an angel. I'm not going to go look at that either, because those are in the Gospels. Now, we've already seen some of these things when we look at and talked about them. An angel opened the door so the apostles could escape from the prison. Now, I'm overlapping a little bit of this, so I can't afford to move along. And the prison doors popped open, the apostles come out, and what happens? They're instructed. A message is given. Go back to the temple where they arrested you and threw you in jail. And God's going to take care of you. And they went back and they're preaching in the same place. And all of these authorities that thought they had them trapped and had to shut them down had to face them again. And then they couldn't do anything with them. And you can see that an angel popped the doors and let them free. An angel, and we'll go to Peter. We've been here, but it will go in Acts 12, 7 through 11. This is such a fun story. I always like to come back to it if I have a shot at it. Acts chapter 12 and verse 7. Says, and behold, an angel of the Lord came upon him, and the light shined in the prison, and he smote Peter on the side. I think we touched this last week. And raised him up, saying, arise quickly, and his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said unto him, gird yourself and bind on your sandals. And so he did. And he said unto him, cast your garment about you and follow me. And he went out and followed him, and did not know that it was true which was done by the angel, but he thought he saw a vision. He knew he was awake. He pinched himself. And he was awake, so he wasn't dreaming. And he just thought he saw some kind of a vision that wasn't real. I think that Peter at this point had determined that he was going to be a dead Peter. And God says, you're not going to be a dead Peter. I'm going to resurrect. I mean, I'm going to protect you so you don't have to wait for the resurrection. And so he thought he saw a vision. And then we know the story as they went out of the city, into the city, and the iron gate, kind of nice when you walk up to the gate and open sesame, it opens. Because you have an angel. Oh, no, he just didn't have to push a button. It opened. And so the angel departs. And so this angel was active in this time of the transition. Now, an angel from the Lord took the life of Herod. And that's in verse 23 of chapter 12. Herod was quite a guy. I read a book. Oh, I'm two-thirds of the way through it or more. And it is sitting in my study on Herod. And I quit. I was reading it on an airplane. And I quit reading it because I wanted to be more awake to read the chapter on his building projects. And it landed in my study, and it's been there for more than a year. So I stopped at that point. And the reason I wanted to do that was I wanted to have a map available. So I could look at the map and see, keep my orientation the way it would be. I think I could make it without the map, but he built so many things, it's not even funny. He was the master builder. And what happened? I mean, he built Caesarea. Why did he build Caesarea? Because it was a city and a palace dedicated to Caesarea. He built the city of Caesarea Philippi, which is up at the foot of Mount Hermon. He built Herodion. Sounds like somebody he honored there. That's just outside of Bethlehem, about 5 miles from Jerusalem, out on the edge kind of the desert. Looks like a volcano because of the way they designed it. And he built city after city, place after place. And Masada. He had a palace in Masada, and he built that. And, of course, when Titus came and tangled with the Jews in 70 A.D. and Jerusalem fell, the great siege of Masada took place. And, of course, Herod was gone and dead, but it was one of his palaces. So he's an interesting guy. So we need all his background on this stuff. 12:23, well, let's look at 20. And Herod was highly displeased with them of Tyre and Sidon. But they came with one accord to him, and having made Blastus, the king's chamberlain, their friend, desired peace, because their country was nourished by the king's country. There was trade. There was produce that came from the land that was controlled by Herod as a representative of the Roman Empire. And upon a set day, Herod, arrayed in royal apparel, sat upon the throne and made a public speech to them. The AV translates an oration. He spoke publicly. This was a PR speech. And the people gave a shout, saying, "It is the voice of a God and not of man." And a God is no article. And he started to strut around on that stage. No, it doesn't say that, does it? And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him, or an angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave God not the glory. And he was eaten of worms, and he expired. Eaten of worms, and he breathed out. And so he died. In that matter, the AV says, gave up the ghost. Ex, out of breathed out on that. So you can see something there. And that, kind of an interesting way to die. You know, it's always fun when you read medical things about the Bible and how people are trying to diagnose illnesses that people have. And they don't quite figure that one out on it. You know what they used to? No, this is gross. some of the old artwork in the Roman church where they were not afraid to be gross had maggots all over him. So he had a pebbly, maggotized skin in that artwork. It's amazing we exist, isn't it? I was reading about how many bacilli are on our skin and in our bodies. And what was it? It was like 20 million, a trillion, 20 trillion that are not native. They get there. There's a big discussion about bacilli. Some of the real bad bacilli, they're beginning to think some of them counter some of the other bad ones. So they've killed some, and all of a sudden new diseases seem to come up. And it's just kind of an interesting study. I know who knows all about it, and I'm going to go see him pretty soon here. On that. Okay, so let's go on. Angels have a special language. If I speak with the tongues of angels and have not agape love, that's 1 Corinthians 13:1. The language of angels. What is their language beside Hebrew? They do. I mean, they have some way they communicate, and it's interesting. They use glossolalia, which is a word for language. They assemble to report to God. We've already been here at least twice. I'm not going back to Hebrews 12. You have to look at it in the Greek. Realize there's no division. I trust you marked it. Now, the activities of angels in the tribulation period. Michael and his unfallen angels will engage in war with Satan and his angels and win in the middle of the tribulation. And we can see that in Revelation 12, 7 and 8. And it's mid-trib. Takes a minute, a bit to peg it as mid-trib, but it is, because let's read it and then we'll get there. I'm going to read verse 4. I could read back even further. "And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and it cast them to earth. And the dragon stood before the woman that was ready to be delivered," that's Israel, "for to devour the child as soon as it was born," this is Matthew 3. "And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne," at which point we have a residence in this matter. And then it says, "The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1260 days. Now you add that all up, that's 3.5 years, and that involves the last half of the tribulation period. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, And the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not, neither was there place found for them any more in heaven. So you have 1260 days. It's at the middle of the tribulation period. And they fight. You have a cherub and is fighting with his demons. He's fighting Michael, who is an archangel, and unfallen angels. Again, God is making a point. And it says even Satan is cast out, and it says where in the end of 9, he's cast out to the earth, and his angels are cast out with him. It tells you they did not inhabit, they did not have dwelling on earth, they had access to, and they could hang around earth, but they could go elsewhere in the second heaven. And I'm convinced that they inhabit heavenly bodies, whether they're stars or planets or asteroids, whatever. They have a habitation in the heavens in that manner. But here they're cast to earth mid-trib, and that stirs up some problems. And it took an archangel and his spirit beings to bring that victory. And, well, isn't it kind of fun? I used to think it would be a lot of fun to watch that happen. I don't think we're going to care, because we will have been in heaven in the presence of the Lord at least 3.5 years, probably a little bit longer than 3.5 years. So that will make a big difference. Now, some limitations of angels in the New Testament. I was looking for some notes yesterday and was wandering through it, and I found my little list of things that God cannot do. And it was just kind of on my list of scripture that said what God couldn't do. You know, I mean, we can say he can't fail, he can't lie, you know, on and on. And there are verses for most of that. But here the angels couldn't do certain things. But don't forget, they are not omnipotent. They're greater than we are, a higher level of existence than we are. But they're not omnipotent, and they don't have power. An angel can, and I'm just talking about a demon in Romans 8 and 38, they're part of those who cannot separate a believer from the love of God. I like it in that passage. He gives you this list, and the last one is, nor any other creature, any other creating, anything else was a source of creation at any time, and that includes you. The charismatics or the Arminians, they don't know about this any other creature because they think they can separate. And I've talked to a number of people that are just totally convinced that nothing can separate them from the Lord except them. They can do it by something they do. And no wonder some of them are so reliant on soul rather than spirit. They cannot bring a blaspheming judgment before the Lord. And that's in 2 Peter 2:11. I think about some of these passages, it seems like yesterday we were in 2 Peter, but it's been a little longer than that. So, 2 Peter 2:11, there it is. And it says, whereas angels which are greater in power and might bring not a railing accusation against them before the Lord. Now this railing accusation is the Greek word blasphemion. Blasphemy, let's do it easy. And that's where we are with it. And so you can see they don't have the power to do that. That is to say, wouldn't it be interesting if there were certain realms of government where that wouldn't happen? You would have to tell the truth and not lie. And not attribute something to someone else and say somebody else did it and you did it. Or say that you did something and you didn't. That's what has to blasphemy. And if that happened, what would happen to government? I'm afraid that the world system would have a real time of it with that matter. And that becomes significant. Let's see, there are some things angels cannot know because they're not omniscient. And one of them is they don't know the day or hour of Christ's coming. They have no idea. That's talking about unfallen and fallen. None of them have any idea the day or the hour of Christ's coming. Angels will have an ability to be able to calculate time better than men on earth, but they'll have to run on a different scale. When the earth is all messed up in the trib period, you won't know one day from the next, or they won't know one day from the next, because it'll kick out of axis, it'll be wobbling on its axis, its spin will change, there will be it will seem like there probably will be a shifting in gears as the days change from 24 hours, and they cut back to, 24, 22, 20, 18, as it gradually speeds up. And it'll be hard to do that with even everything that men know today. Now, guardian angels. Next area related to them. Do you have a guardian angel? If you do, do you have one or more? What do angels have to do with us? Why would God ever give an angel an opportunity to relate to an individual believer? Is this question. Now, it's interesting in the Old Testament, and we can go back in the Old Testament, and there are some instances where God chose angels to do something related to believers in the Old Testament. And, the example is Genesis 19 and 11. You have angels that made some people blind. Now let's get back there so we can see it. That's Genesis chapter 19 and verse 11. See, I bring this Bible. Takes me twice as long to find what I want because the pages are too thin. That's the problem when you write notes in Bibles. You become dependent upon them. Who was it? Somebody was asking me about, or was looking at some of this, my Bible, and they said, they said to someone else, "You don't take notes in your Bible." I know somebody that does. And my Bible's just loaded, normally. Especially in, everywhere. I don't even use the New Testament in this one, normally. You notice I'm juggling them. Because the pages are so bad in the New Testament, I just have to go back and use another round of interlinear. Okay, 19:11 says, there's 11. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to fly and find the door. It's one way to protect them. You know, you can't find the door. I've been writing this adventure in the comic strips. The weasels stole the door in this house, and the cat, what's his name? The cat kept his kitty food in there, his special breath-changing kitty food. And they stole the door, and he couldn't get to his food because there was this war between the weasels and the cat. And the whole thing is hilarious. I wondered if they didn't have some imagination about this Genesis 19 thing. Because this morning they had this detective cat, who is probably not at all qualified, and he was using a stud finder to try to find the door. And it was just, thinking at it from this perspective, I can just see these guys just full of passion, trying to get in the house to get after these two beings that are there. That were outstanding, and they're ready to tear the door down, tear the house down. They can't even find a place to grip it. And these many angels did this. And they protected, as if the two angels that were inside, but they protected Lot and those of his family who were in there, in that matter. It's kind of interesting. We've talked about this. where were Lot's sons-in-laws in this matter? They were outside the door, I'm sure. Because remember, when Lot and his family fled, who fled? Lot and a pillar of salt and his two daughters. And his, on that. So it was interesting in that matter. Okay, so they protected there. They were given charge to guard law believers. Psalm 91 and verse 1 talks about how angels were to relate to those who were believers under the Mosaic law. Now, there were some real advantages of being under law if you were to compare the Jews to everybody else in the world. There certainly don't have even a tenth of what we have in our salvation. But for them to have God's dealing with them was so abnormal in that whole world, and this promise of physical blessing in time in a world that was very tenuous in its existence as it was. So 91:11 says, "For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep thee in all thy ways." Now, let me translate that a little better. No, you're right. It comes out of Matthew 4 and Luke 4. No, I did it again. I'm determined. Yeah, Luke 4. I was already to say Mark, and I keep doing that in this. You probably have that quotation marked in your center column. Mine happens to say cited in. Then let me translate it. It says, "Now he will lift thee up," or bear is not bad. It's the word nasa. "They shall bear you up in their hands." Skip back to where it belongs. "He shall give his angels charge." He will give charge. You know what it is? He will command his angels. It's the word command. It's in what we call a PAL, which is normal for this this form. It's normally PALs are intensive, so he shall give charge. He will command his angels for you. I don't know whether I like over. It's just a preposition for, and I like to keep it simple. So he'll give the angels charge for you to keep you, to guard you, to protect you. Now, I slipped that guard in there not because I wanted to make a point on guardian angels, but I put it in there because that is a normal definition of that word. When it says keep the commandments, that means you're to guard them. And that's that same word as shomer, which means to guard the commandments. And so they will guard you. And let's see, I'm looking at the Hebrew here. In all your ways, everywhere you go, they're going to guard you, protect you. "They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot." That's kind of funny. "Against a stone." I'm trying to remember. I think I'm going to hear a word study on that in the next few days. The word nagath on that. We're having fun with that.
Yeah, Courtney said that to me. I said, "What? Say what? What did you say?" I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're kind of squeezing it all in now on that. So, anyway, you can see that is, to me, that's guardian. That's guarding him. And he's guarding those who are the righteous. Let's put it in a little bit more doctrinal terms, those who were the elect of Israel. Not the elect nation, but those who were elect in this chosen nation. And they would protect them in this matter. An angel delivered those who trusted in God, Daniel 3:28. I'm not going there. We all know Daniel 6 in the lion's den. What did they do? This scrawny old guy is dropped into the lion's den, pushing right around 90 years old, and these famished lions didn't touch him. What happened? An angel shut their mouth. So they didn't, and I say they're famished. Because when they finally fish him out, and he's probably slept really well. I still think that it's my imagination. Is never quit being a kid. And I could see Daniel there with those mouths clamped, and he's laying there with a lion for a pillow. A hungry lion. Though I wonder if he could have slept well with the growling stomachs of the lion in that matter. But that's a picture I have had for a long time. When he's there, that he's got a warm pillow down there in the lion's den. As he sleeps, he's up. And then what happens, they decide these accusers should be dropped down, dropped into the lion's den. And you know what happened there. The guys who made their accusation and their families were dropped in the lion's den. And the first few didn't have a chance to hit the ground. They became what's called a big gulp. And they didn't have to go to 7-Eleven in that matter. And so what happens, they just ate them very, very quickly. And so this is a protection of Daniel that God sent. And we do have a problem in Psalm 34 where there sometimes is a question let's read 34:7. Psalm 34, verse 7, and then I can say more about it. Psalm 34:7 says, "The angel of the Lord encamps round about them that fear him and delivereth them." Now you see, there's some will make this a guardian angel. What does it say? It says the angel of the Lord. I don't think he's talking about lowly angel. I think this is a manifestation of God the Son. And every time you see angel of the Lord, remember I've mentioned it. And that is you don't have an article in front of anywhere in the Old Testament. It's an official title, and so. I don't think anytime you have angel of the Lord in the Old Testament should you ever say an angel. And that's what they would do here. I like it because it says he encamps around about them that fear him. And he draws them off or draws them out, translated deliver.
So you're saying this is an angel or is it?
This is the angel of the Lord. This is not Jehovah. Yeah. Yeah, and so they misconstrue it, but if you're looking for defense of the angel of the Lord, it's good. I just was saying it wrong. If you don't believe the angel of the Lord is Jehovah, some will use this as a defense of that because he's acting as a guardian, and so they're trying to make guardian angels. This thing of guardian angels, I agree with Vernon McGee and many, 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 and most things. Let's just put it most. But I don't agree with him on guardian angels. He does not believe that there's such a thing as a guardian angel. He did not. He does now. He changed his theology. But would he know that now? I don't think we would care. I mean, if you're in glory in that matter, so. Anyway, I needed to touch that on the way through. Under the law, and I won't go to you have these children that had their angels. Maybe we ought to go over to Matthew 18, because I don't know that we always are aware of this. Under law in the Gospels, you do have this description, and this is just sort of floats in. And I know what happens. Some liberals will say, this is some tradition that comes out of a Middle Eastern Mediterranean religion. And no, Christ is involved in the discussion of this. Matthew 18 and verse 10 says, "Take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, these micron ones, microbiology, anytime you have micro, M-I-C-R-O in front of it, it's little. And so that's the word here. and it's with a plural. It says these ones, these little ones. For I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. So here you have little ones, and there are angels, and I believe that this is a reference under law to elect individuals when they're children, under law. I mean, these are real believers, and these angels are going to make certain they get where they need to get and come to their election. And so it's an odd verse, and these angels, how many? It doesn't say. No, that's a big problem. We'll probably talk a little bit more about it next week. And that is, how many angels does it take care of some people? You know, I mean, some of you may get away with one or two, but then there's Don. He has a legion of 20 of them. Anyway, isn't it nice to have friends like me?
Yeah. I would do the same for you.
I know you would. But anyway, we don't know. I really think that there are times where, God assigns them. And so when they come, there are certain things they're going to learn. And an all-knowing God can assign an angel or more than one angel for his purposes. And I don't know whether there are crowds of angels sometimes. When God is going to do something in the life of a believer in special ways, and we're going to look at this before we get out, because this is a section I wanted to be in as we get into next week. I won't probably get to the end of these notes because I normally never do. I'd hate to break a record and finish them in that. But when you think about, how many, we are a theater to angels. The word theatros, if we think in those terms, our word theater comes from it. And for believers, that could mean more than one. I think of the amphitheaters in the Roman Empire of the day in which Paul wrote. And I've never been there. It's one of those places that if I never see, it won't change my salvation any, but it would be fun to go to Ephesus. And the reason I think it would be fun to go to Ephesus is because I've seen so many pictures of it and read so much about it. They say that in that big, big, big amphitheater, you can sit in the back row, way up on the top of the hill, and they can whisper from the center stage, and you can hear the whisper. That's the kind of acoustics there are. And it's really interesting. There are so many of those amphitheater places in Caesarea. They have repaired the amphitheater adjacent to where Herod's palace was. And they have all kinds of concerts there. I'm sure some of those early people that lived there when he built that would be a little repulsed by some of it. I mean, they have rock and roll. I don't remember which group was there back when they were early. When they got that thing done, they brought in some international rock and roll group, and they really, really knocked it out, I guess, in there. So, anyway, we will, let's see, I need to check where I want to break here, so I've got it. Okay. We've already talked about Peter in prison. We'll come back to 4. So we'll be back on number 4, page 26, and that will be our last session.
Right?
Oh, that was my bifocal line.
Was that 26? See, or half 26?
There's a 6 there, right there. Yeah. I've worn both bifocals so long, and I still can't. And those other lenses make me sick.
You know? The transition?
Yeah, they don't. I mean, they make me feel irpy sometimes. I've done it one time, and I said, no more.
They said I looked at it maybe years ago, and they said it takes about a month to get used to them. You may cause severe nausea and everything. And certain eye problems, you can't even have them. I couldn't. They wouldn't. They wouldn't happen. But they're real hard to get used to. And it takes a good month. It can really upset your stomach, affect your equilibrium. Really, it doesn't help.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to me. I felt real...
Yeah, it does.
Irpy. and that. So anyway, so we'll be back there, and you can see we'll be working these guardian angels, and we'll be hopscotching down to number 18 on 21. So we'll have a lot of places we can go. The fun part, you know, you're going to judge angels. We're going to judge angels. You think about that in the future. And there are other things in here. The theater one is down on the M in the notes. There's just some really, really fun things that happen with angels. Angels are very much involved in our lives, unfallen ones. And when we understand some of it, I think it adds a dimension to the beauty of being passive and being at the right hand so God can use his angels and give them some instruction in that matter. So, okay, let's pray. Thank you, Father, for the evening, the joy that we have in your book. And again, we're thankful for all of your wisdom as it's manifested in the creating of beings that I use to give you glory. And we'll thank you as you continue to guide in the next hour. We're thankful again for these opportunities in Christ's name. Amen. Okay.
Danny, I don't have my eyes off you and said there's some people that never get used to it.
Yeah.
She said they're really not for everybody.
Yeah, now my problem is if I got some and I went ahead and used them a lot, my optometrist is a little distance away, so.
Do you have your light?
Well, you got it. Yeah, I got it.